Hey, I'm Lance Frazier.
Damon Rosenberg.
My name is Trey Mason.
You're listening to the Piffles Podcast.
I'm Cameron Marshall, and you're listening to the Piffles Podcast.
That's so fun.
Stay tuned.
And here we go, guys. We're here for a special episode of the Piffles Podcast. You know what makes it special this week? I'm getting the old Iron Man streak back. Both Alex and Greg are out today, so we've got a couple of special guests here tonight. So I'm gonna introduce myself. My name is Steven.
I'm Sheldon.
And I'm Ferlin.
You'll remember Ferlin used to co-host our show, and Sheldon is a regular writer on Piffles Podcast. He's got the View from the Stands articles that come out on a regular basis now, so check those out. You can find us on Twitter, at PifflesPod. You can find me, at Safamod.
I'm at SheldonJones83.
And I'm at Fernie635.
You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/PifflesPod. Instagram, everything else, anything you would look for the social media side, just search PifflesPod. And of course, check out the website, PifflesPodcast.com. Lots of stuff going out there. We're into rider season. We have finally made it. One preseason game down, one to go. Check out the site. There's going to be lots going on. As always, Piffles Podcast is brought to you by Dairy Queen on Elphinstone Street and Sass Drive in Regina. Check out their great happy hour drink specials, half price Monday to Friday. And I did actually stop in today and had myself an Arctic Freeze. If you've ever had, are those actually on the menu?
They are.
Are they?
They are now. They didn't used to be, but now they are.
That's why. I used to get them when they weren't. The Arctic Rush with ice cream in it, freaking delicious. Great on a 35 degree weather. Ferlin and I just came in from beach volleyball, so we're, that 35-degree heat, and one of those would go sweet right now. Before we get into the show, the folks at Piffles Podcast would like to offer our condolences out to the friends and family of Justin Filteau, former Saskatoon Hilltop and U of S Husky, and coach of the Saskatoon Valkyrie, was killed in a small plane crash near Medicine Hat on Saturday night. So our thoughts go out to him, his family and friends, and the team and whatnot, our condolences. So we actually had CFL football last week. We had the first preseason game of the year. Let's start off with the opening kickoff, brought to you by Kathy Feston of Royal LePage Regina Realty. So Friday night, smoky day in Calgary, late start. It looks like the Riders didn't really show up at all.
But did they bring anybody?
That's the biggest question. Who really was there to show up against the number ones? If we know Calgary's going to be a good team, the score shouldn't matter. But who looked good? Who was your shining player of the game for Friday night?
I think Cody Fajardo. He looked to solidify his spot as the backup, I think. He definitely did way better than Watford, I would say.
Fajardo, of course, he did very well. Isaac Harker, he also looked really good. I think he bypassed Watford for sure.
Yep.
Looking at receivers, Austin Ellsworth, Paul McRoberts both had a couple decent plays.
You know, I have to agree with you on Isaac Harker, mostly because he seems to be that heir apparent when it comes to the next guy in Saskatchewan. We love our backup quarterbacks, and there's nothing better than the backup, or the backup to the backup, as it seems. And Harker's shown well in training camp. He didn't look out of place for his first CFL game experience. I have to agree with you there. My shout-out for the game actually goes to Deshaun Davis, the free agent pickup from BC. I thought he had a decent game. He seemed to attack the ball, played well, showed that we have some depth in that linebacking spot that we were starting to wonder who's going where. He only made a couple of tackles, but he seemed to be around the ball whenever he was on the field. So he was my pick.
He had a couple knockdowns too, I believe.
Overall, he looked pretty good. Especially when we're still sitting here waiting for the first signing or sighting of Solomon Elamimian. You know, we need to make sure we've got somebody who can show up game one. And he didn't look like he'd be out of place if that spot falls to him. Now, on the flip side of that, who looked out of place? Who looked bad?
I'd have to say the guy that's halfway or over halfway to the Kevin Glenn award, Felix Menard-Briere. He had one field goal attempt, and that was something else.
He did get our only point, though.
That's true. He should have been, tripling that point. But.
Yeah.
You're asking too much. Now, this is Saskatchewan, where preseason games, we don't win them. I mean, we've won three, if I heard correctly online today, since 2009.
Yeah.
That is 3-18 now. The Riders have never cared about winning in preseason. It's all about checking out the depth. There's certain teams that seem to go for that win, and Calgary's one of them.
Dave.
I mean, good on them. I mean, you got to get your first guys. They know who their team's going to be for the most part. They got to get those first guys, those reps, and it's their home game. You know, we're going to bring our starters for our home game. And if the games were in reverse, we probably would have had more starters as well. That's how it works when it comes down to these games. For me, the guy who actually looked bad, and I hate to say this, and I'm not going to run him out of town because he's going to be our week one starter, John Ryan. He didn't bring those booming 50-yard punts that we wanted. He averaged 38 yards a punt. Was it 38, 39 yards a punt? You know, we could have gotten that for $20,000, $30,000 cheaper last year.
Yeah, his first punt looked pretty decent, but then that second punt, he definitely whiffed on it. And yeah, that could have been jitters, you know, rust. We'll have to see what happens on Thursday night here. But
he's a kid living his childhood dream, right? Oh. You're never going to have that first performance. It can always be a little jittery.
I went to high school, John, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, I was in grade 9 when he was in grade 12. So, but
very nice. A little throwback there.
Yeah, no, it was great.
A few years back, eh?
Yeah.
Now, the one thing that I love, and I'm gonna say this now, we love to poke fun at Bombers fans. I gotta say, I'm really laughing at it seems to be mostly Winnipeg fans that are doing the Riders should be ashamed of themselves, 37-1, or Riders were embarrassed. You know, I understand why they're doing it. This is this is all they've got. Preseason titles is all that Winnipeg has had since the 90s. So, I mean, take your jokes, have your fun. We'll compete for the championship at the end of the year while you guys are going on year 30 of unfinished business. And I really hope that happens because if we can make it to 30 years, next year's going to be a lot of fun at Mosaic Stadium when Labor Day rolls around. So,
absolutely.
Winnipeg, do your thing and crap the bed one more time if you could. That would be glorious. any other, you know, standouts from Friday night that really, you know?
Well, as we said before, like, this is year 3 for Watford, and it just doesn't look like he has it. They didn't let him throw last year, and it seems to be apparent as to why. He just can't seem to get it.
That's kind of where I'm leaning with Harker being ahead of him. Harker, I think, has more upside. Watford, I think what we see is what we get with him.
And how often can we hear Derek Taylor say, from the Colorado School of Mines, that would be amazing. That's the greatest school name ever. But all honesty, yeah, no, Harker actually looked really good, and he's had a great camp, from what I can tell. Honestly, I don't think even in this upcoming preseason game that they should even play anyone but Harker, Fajardo, and Caleros. I don't see a point to even playing Watford anymore.
And we will get into what we want to see come game 2 a little bit later in the show. I do have to agree with you. I think Watford has clearly been surpassed. And he's been surpassed by a guy who has, you know, 8 practices under his belt. That's not a good sign. You know, he was surpassed last year when Nick Marshall came on to do the goal line plays because they didn't trust Watford at that point. If you can't trust your second or third string quarterback to run your goal line options, you got to find a new option. And I think they have. I think Harker looks like he has the potential to be something down the line. Now, we've seen a lot of potential over the years. I mean, Rocky Butler screams to mind as the big one, but there's been a ton of guys with potential. I'm hoping this is the one that stands out. But we know who our starting quarterback is. We know week one, you know, knock on wood, barring any kind of injury, that Zach Caleros will be under center when the Riders open the season. So here's hoping on that one. The one thing that stood out to me on Friday night, and Craig Dickinson actually alluded to this today after camp, was the philosophical differences between the Calgary Stampeders and the Saskatchewan Roughriders, especially on offense. If you actually go back and look at the stats from that game, the Riders went 13 of 35 for passing attempts for 192 yards. Works out to 5.5 yards a pass. Or pass attempt. Calgary, on the other hand, 17 of 28 for 344 yards and 12.3 yards per pass attempt. That tells you exactly how these two offenses are going to go. And Dickinson said it in practice today. He said that the Riders are going to be a dink-and-dunk offense. They're going to try and chew up field, chew up clock, and go deep when they have to. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's one of the most effective ways to run an offense. Like, throwing up 50-50 balls all the time, yeah, you're going to get some incredible yardage off that, but you're also going to throw a lot of picks. You're not going to... It's not going to be positive for you all the time. Dinking and dunking, going the old Paul LaPolice offense. Like, back in the day, that used to be awesome. We love that. And as long as it's effective and run properly, it's great.
I think as soon as we found out McAdoo was coming back, it's exactly what we should have expected. It was this conservative offense that only goes for that home run ball when they absolutely have to. It's what we had last year. It's what we had the year before. It's what we're going to get this year, and until McAdoo is either chased out of town or goes somewhere else.
Yeah, they've always said they want a game manager for the quarterback, and that doesn't necessarily mean a Bo Levi Mitchell type. You just want someone who can manage the game, get those passes, hand off the ball, get those screens, and yeah, chew the clock.
And we've got a lot of guys in the receiving core that can make guys miss, you know, once that little screen pass is thrown. There's no question. We all knew it going into the season. This is what we were going to see. But it is kind of refreshing to see the coach come out and say, yep, this is what you're going to get. Although I would love to see week one, play one, 60-yard bomb just because, right? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that just shut people up? But we all know it's not going to happen.
Yeah, no, Craig, he's very forward, and he's very methodical in how he talks, and he was a great hire for us, and I'm excited for him.
Well, we've seen an opening from the coaching staff and from the management staff when it comes to player decisions just through this offseason. Look at Darian Durant. The Riders came out and said, we have no interest. Look at Weston Dressler. The Riders came out and said, we had no interest because there was conversation. And we're going to get into another guy that the Riders today said they have no interest in just because he's got that Regina connection. And it's nice to see, you know, that honesty and forthcoming nature that we did not get from Chris Jones. Chris Jones didn't care if you agreed with what he thought. He didn't care if you thought it was right. He was doing it his way, and that's just the way it was. You know, I think we officially have spent more time on the opening preseason game than the Riders did in planning and preparing for that game and playing that game. I think it's time to move on. Let's look at a couple of the roster moves that the Riders made today before we get into anything else. They added wide receiver Carlos Henderson, and Alex will like this one. He's a former third-round pick of his Denver Broncos back in 2017. He's a young guy, got some talent, but as usual when it comes to those young guys with talent, comes with a couple of issues, including suspension for marijuana use, which we all know in Canada and in the CFL, we don't care. There's nobody cares about pot up here. Welcome aboard. Hope he's got the talent. And he's a guy that's going to spring some of those other guys, the second-year players. They're going to see this guy with third-round talent coming up, and they're going to have to step up their game. We also activated Christian Jones from the IR. Good to see him back. There was a lot of talk about him maybe not being a Rider at the end of last year, just the way he was talking, the way the team was talking, but he's back and he was at camp today. And I never thought I would say this. I am excited to see Dan Clark back on the field.
Amen. Yeah.
I remember a year ago, Rider Nation was ready to run him out of town. And then he got hurt. He came back, and I don't know what happened, but he has been a beast ever since. So much so that he survived a freaking rollover where he gets ejected from the car. Good luck, defensive tackles.
Yeah.
So with the return of Dan Clark, what does that say about our offensive line now?
I think it just solidifies it even more. Like, obviously, we're going to be a little bit better with Dakota Shepley actually being here and going through an actual training camp. Darius Bladick looks healthy, and again, he was a question mark at the beginning of the year too, so it's good to see him in there. And old faithful Labatt is still kicking, and I think we're in good shape.
I think the biggest thing with the return of Dan Clark is we're not going to be rushing someone like Dakota Shepley into the starting lineup like we did 3 years ago with Josiah St. John. He had his contract holdout, missed training camp and all that, and obviously wasn't ready when injuries piled up. But it's never worked out when somebody just gets rushed into the lineup like that. So I think with having Labatt back at his natural left guard, Dan Clark at center, Bladek at right guard, and then our two international tackles, I think our offensive line is in great shape to start the year.
And of course, the flip side of that, there were a couple of released players. We're going to see a lot of these over the next few weeks. The no surprise after that field goal attempt was kicker Felix Menard-Briere, defensive back Devon Jernigan, offensive lineman Danny Spriculis, and the one that stood out to me, wide receiver Brock McCoyne. I thought he did okay. There was word that he broke his wrist, I believe, so it's likely we'll see you for now, but when you get healthy, we'll give you that call back instead of keeping him on the injured list.
Yeah, there was good reports out of camp for him, which is, it's a shame that he got that injury, but yeah, look to see him back if he can.
You know, all things considered, and I say this again, knocking on wood, the Riders came out of Calgary relatively healthy. There wasn't any major injuries other than Brock McCoyne. There was no huge players that went down. We've seen players across the league going down. Achilles injuries seem to be the big thing again this year. So it was nice to see the Riders escape that smoke in Calgary with, a point and, a healthy squad. You know, we got a game on Thursday night that's really going to start defining our season. So let's move on from that. The opening kickoff was brought to you by Kathy Festian of Royal LePage Regina Realty. Check out our Facebook page, Kathy Festian, Royal LePage. Let's move into some other CFL news. The big news of the CFL week, the Montreal Alouettes are no longer owned by the Wettenhall family.
And in classic CFL fashion, they announced it an hour before two preseason games on a Friday afternoon.
Yeah, the timing of that was a little questionable, not going to lie, but we've come to expect that from the CFL. What are your thoughts on this? Now that the other eight teams officially own the Montreal Alouettes.
Well, I think they're going to try to flip it very quickly. The teams aren't going to want to bleed money for the Alouettes here. It's interesting, though, that they've already come out and say that Eric Lapointe's group is out already. So that's, you'd think they'd want to pull all the bids together and try to get the best one. So I wonder what happened there.
Yeah, there's two other groups, I think. Guzzo, he's out of the running. I think there was another group that's out of the running, and they've only got one group that they're exclusively dealing with right now. So whoever it is, they must really like them to give them that exclusivity on it.
Yeah, there hasn't been a lot of talk on who it is, just what they can bring. And apparently there's no former player involved. It's just a business thing, but it's good to see that the league's taking this seriously and trying to get that single owner on board, because the teams can't afford to hold the Montreal Alouettes. If that story of $12 million lost last year is true, the Riders could afford to lose $1.5 million. The Bombers could probably afford it. Can some of those, the Torontos and the Hamilton, well, Hamilton can, Bob Young could afford to buy the league. But, they need to make these decisions quick. They need to jump on board and sell them. But it's interesting how quickly this, escalated. We were talking about the sale to the Guzzo team last week, and then all of a sudden he's gone, and the news is official that the CFL owns them. How long do you think it takes before Montreal is officially sold?
I don't know. Like, it's a tricky situation, because if they're only exclusively negotiating with one party, are they going to get the best deal, or is it just a quick turnover, which I guess is probably what the league would want? But the other interesting thing is the front office, the coaching staff, Kavis, like, what happens there? Because are these owners going to want a clean house? Are they going to be allowed to clean house? There's the football operations cap in effect now. There's a lot of factors at play here.
You do bring up a good point with the football operations cap, because if they, according to the rules, if they want to come in next year and clean house, they can't. But I have a feeling with a sale of the team and them wanting to push this sale and the other teams owning them and wanting to help that sale along, I have a feeling they'll allow an amnesty of a year should should that help push the sale to its, you know, final destination.
Yeah, and I think it should. They should do that. It's kind of ironic how some people would say that we were definitely handicapped by that in our search for Chris Jones's replacement. However, I still think we got the right people. But yeah, if it's what's best for the league, I think it's definitely best to offer them that exemption to let them get their own guys in here.
Now, another big thing that happened on Friday nights. Friday seemed to be the big day for everything. We had our first women reffing a CFL preseason game. We had Emily Clark and Georgina Paul reffing the Calgary Stampeders versus Saskatchewan Roughriders game. And from all accounts, outside of one odd situation on the sidelines, seemed to do a good job, seemed to be respected, and seemed to be treated like any other ref. It was nice to see the CFL jump right on board and get them in there. I'm hoping to see more of that throughout the season and into the regular season. But one of our followers, at Nomad Matt, wanted to ask your guys' thoughts on the TSN screen grab of Bo Levi Mitchell and a few others dancing and joking and mocking with Georgina Paul.
I think it might be a little bit overblown. Yes, it's not something that we've seen with a male ref. It's also not something we've seen a male ref do. Because apparently the camera missed Hearst basically swaying to the music. And then camera picked up Bo and the one Calgary coach. So then it just kind of looked like a disrespectful situation. But I think from the... I'm not sure which one it was, but she was laughing along with them. So I don't think she took any offense to it. So it's, as much as I'd love to hate on Calgary, I don't think in this case it's something that we need to really lose our minds over.
Yeah, I think if it was something like that, I think the league would have came out and shot it down pretty quickly, because it was a positive step, and I'm all for it continuing. I hope regular season we can have some female refs. It's great. Football is a sport for everyone, and so it's great to see everyone being included.
And you know, the other thing, if she was, you know, swaying along with the music on the sideline, good for her. Like, I mean, we like to take football seriously, but at the end of the day, it's a game. Like, we don't have to take it so seriously. Just have some fun with it.
Oh yeah, she's having fun. It, like, who knows that? Reffing a football game, that's a huge thing for her. So she's just enjoying the moment.
I'm with you. I love to pile on the Stampeders. It's always fun if there's an opportunity there. But I feel like this one was way overblown. And it to me, it seems like it was one of those situations where they caught 10% of the story. And the 10%, we can all admit, looks bad.
Yeah.
If you rule out any other possibilities that might have happened. You know, the TSN, Chris Edwards with TSN came out and tried to explain it right away. Good on him. We haven't heard anything from the ref herself or from Bo Levi, but I don't imagine they really want to drag this out. They want the story to be where it belongs, and where it belongs is the inclusivity of the CFL and the expanding of the reffing groups, because we've complained for years about the quality of reffing in the CFL. So it's good to see the CFL expand and try, you know, to see where this takes them. Now, I mentioned this player earlier, but we're gonna bring it up here. Noah Pickton released by the Toronto Argonauts. Should the Riders sign him?
Nope.
And, you know, Ferland and I worked with Noah. Great guy. Love the guy. And I wish him well in his football career. But this is not an organization right now that is interested in the... what's the word?
Sentimental value.
The sentimental value. There you go. You know, you saw with Darian Durant, you saw with Western Dressler, although they did go that sentimental row with John Ryan, but that's also because he can boot the hell out of a punt. You know, unfortunately at this point in his career, Noah Pickton hasn't shown that he could come in and be a number two and number three with the Saskatchewan Roughriders. We don't need a guy on the practice roster. We're going to have, what's his name, Ty Ganji? We have Isaac Harker, you know. Maybe they're still holding out hope for David Watford. We've got Zach Caleros.
Yeah, it's a big no. We're set at QB. Yeah.
Yep. And the team again came out and said, no, we're not interested. Which I love seeing that direct response and get that story gone before it starts to explode into what we saw. Because we, as soon as Pickton was released, there was a lot of talk on social media about him coming here and the Riders should sign him and Zach Calero sucks and Noah Pickton is the savior. And stop it. For the love of God, stop it.
There's some positions that you can maybe open up a spot for a sentimental value player like Noah Pickton, but quarterback is the last one you should be doing that with.
Yeah, and everyone is all like, oh, the Canadian quarterback ratio, but that's not going to apply to somebody who's sitting on a practice roster. That's if this individual is good enough to start, and no, he's not ready.
Not yet. Could he be? Sure. He has the talent. He showed it in college with the Rams. He's got the talent to play ball, but at this point, he doesn't help the roster. He doesn't help the ratio. You know, I hope he gets a chance somewhere. I hope somebody picks him up and gives him that look, but I won't be here. And speaking of quarterbacks that won't be in Saskatchewan, Dominique Davis gets the start week one in Ottawa. Does this change your opinion at all on whether the Riders should have gone after Jonathan Jennings?
Not really. I think Jonathan Jennings was always like a plan C. And yes, he's shown that he has the tools, but the thing that I'm questioning is how they're already announcing Dominique Davis as starter after the first preseason game. Like, you would think that if it was an open competition like they said it was, that they would be giving them the second preseason game to see, but maybe Ed Hervey was right.
The only thing I can see with Jennings, or with Dominique Davis getting announced this early as the number one, is he's had more time in the system, coaches like him, management likes him. They're just giving him the go-ahead based on that, and Jennings has only had since February to get familiar with the playbook. Well, a month to get familiar with the playbook since they had to lose a offensive coordinator, but yeah, it's mind-boggling that they announced it this early with that open competition they said they had, but I guess that's why I'm not a general manager or a head coach in football.
The fact that he was announced as the week one starter after 7 passes tells me it was never an open competition, and it shouldn't have been. You know, Dominique Davis has been in that system for a while. He deserves a chance to get the start over, unless Jennings showed like an all-star in camp and showed up in preseason. There was never a doubt in my mind that Dominique Davis would start, and this just solidifies my thoughts on why the Riders didn't go after Jonathan Jennings. If he can't beat out Dominique Davis, he wasn't going to beat out Zach Caleros. And why would you bring him in at $300,000 if he's not going to be the guy? So I think the Riders made the right call. I think Ottawa's making the right call. Will that change throughout the season? Absolutely. He's probably going to start 5, 6, 7 games, as will 2 other quarterbacks, because that team is a disaster right now. But that is a conversation for a whole nother day, because this is preseason, and we don't care about Ottawa, right? Well, that's not true. We still care about Ottawa. We like you guys, kind of, not really.
We interrupt the Piffles podcast for this very important announcement. Steve does not have the Ironman streak. I do. That's Greg at Greg on Sports. Steve, learn to edit. Now, back to Sheldon, Ferdlin, and Steve for the remainder of the show. Thank you.
So that brings us to the end of the CFL news. Let's look at a couple of the fan questions that came out. This is the big one. At SGibbs1 asks, how does it feel to know Micah Johnson is playing for you and not against you?
I think this is one of the rare situations where a team can lose a player as talented as Willie Jefferson on the defensive line and still somehow come out ahead. There's no other precedented situation. There's nothing else that I can remember that anything like that happened.
No, I agree. Like, as soon as we announced that we signed Micah Johnson, I believe it was before Willie signed in Winnipeg, and at that point, the writing was on the wall, obviously, but I was like, we don't need Willie anymore. We have Charleston on the one side. We get AC Leonard back after, and he's no slouch. He's going to be good this year, especially on that bookend. And then we got Zach Evans and Micah Johnson in the middle. Dare I say this is the best D-line we've ever had.
It's definitely up there with some of the great D-lines of the Jurison days, for sure. But, you know, and you said it exactly right. You know, yeah, we lost Willie Jefferson, and that's going to hurt. But when you add a guy who can blow up the middle like Micah Johnson and pair him next to a Canadian guy who can blow up the middle like Zach Evans, and then just, you know, I'm just going to add an Eastern All-Star to the other bookend across from the three-time defending sack leader. You know, I thought our defensive line was going to scare people last year. It's going to get even more terrifying this year because now that threat is going to come up the middle first. And they're going to have to leave A.C. Leonard and Charleston Hughes single-teamed. And I don't want to be the guy that's got to go up against either of those on my own.
No, we're going to be playing against a lot of tight end sets.
Not to mention A.C. Leonard is familiar with the system. Obviously, it's not Chris Jones running the defense. It's Jason Shivers. But I don't think we're going to see that much change that AC Leonard's going to come in and have to relearn an entire defense. It's going to be mostly the same as what we've had. So that familiarity is going to really help our defense in the long run as well.
And we also had statistically the most three-man rushes last year. And if that's one thing that Shivers does decide to change, if we're rushing four, and only even four with that four, that it's like we're rushing five. It's like we're blitzing just because of the sheer power.
So from what I understand from the two of you, basically to answer this question, it feels absolutely amazing. Thank you, Calgary, for the gift that is Micah Johnson, because he is a terrifying beast that will have some fun in that middle line. I'm really looking forward to seeing the two of them, him and Zach Evans, blowing up the middle all season long. And I hope we see that on Thursday night. I hope we get some more starter action, and we'll find that out on Wednesday when the depth chart comes out. But that's going to be scary.
Not to mention Micah and Charleston have $1,000 wager right now on who's the sack leader. So it's going to be a friendly competition, but they're going to be going for those sacks.
Who wins?
I think Charleston wins. I still think he does win.
I think Charleston, you got to give the guy on the edge the advantage.
Well, especially when you've got the guy in the middle who's going to be double-teamed constantly, leaving the guy on the edge wide open. I think we're going to see Micah Johnson's sack numbers go down, but it's not because he's not performing. We're going to see our team sack numbers go up.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if the four of those guys, if we have 40 sacks between the four of those guys.
That's a terrifying number. I certainly hope so. Now, Adam Stewart on Twitter wants to know, and this is going to lead us into our next segment, what are you looking to see out of the Riders on Thursday night that you didn't see on Friday?
I just want to see the first team offense, first team defense, just see what they can do against what's likely going to be a mostly set in stone Winnipeg offense and defense, just to see what we actually have, see what McAdoo's changing this year, maybe see what Jason Shivers has changed from Chris Jones's defense. See everything, kind of preview it a little to what we can expect throughout the season.
Yeah, I'm not sure we're going to see too many changes, unfortunately. I think it's going to be very vanilla, like most preseason games. But yeah, I want to see sustained drives. I want to see Zach throwing up balls that his receiver can catch. As long as they're catchable balls, drops happen. But I want to see Zach on target. And I just want to see William Powell in green. Like,
it's going to be a thing of beauty.
Yeah. Like, he burned us, and now we have him. Him, Thigpen, ugh.
We got a legitimate thunder and lightning behind a really good offensive line with receivers who are a year older. You know, I don't know why people are underestimating this Rider squad. You know, not a lot has changed other than our defensive line getting better, our receiving core getting better, from a team that finished second in the West, you know, one game behind the league leaders.
Yeah, even with all of, like with Zach's injury, missing time, we were 10-4 with him when he started the game. And yes, the defense won a good amount of those games. However, our offense still moved the ball. Not great, but for Nick Marshall, I don't know the exact stats, but I think 7 touchdowns.
You didn't come prepared for this?
Yeah, sorry. I'm disappointed. Rookie mistake. Yeah. But for the amount of, like, 1-yard sneaks that Marshall got, he didn't drive that offense. Zach did. Brandon sometimes did. Not really.
Not often.
But, like, people forget, and people just look at, oh, our offense was terrible, but was it really? We still scored touchdowns. Yes, it wasn't great, but it can only improve, or McAdoo will be gone.
You know, you asked the question, was our defense, or was our offense terrible? Yes, it was. Yes, it was. I mean, we did succeed in moving the ball. The point I want to take from your comment mostly there was the number of 1-yard goal line drives from Nick Marshall. How do you think they got there? On Zach Caleros' back. Yes, the guy only threw, what, 9 touchdown passes last year? Was it 9?
Yeah.
It was an extremely small number.
Yeah.
But it's not like they didn't drive the field to get those 1-yard touchdown drives. Yes, some of them were penalty aided. A lot of them were passes out to the 1, 2, 3, 4-yard line. They moved the ball great between the 20s. They did not move the ball great outside of the 20s. And that is a thing that I think they'll improve upon, especially with some of the guys that are coming back for year 2. You know, they've got another year in the system. They've got another year with Zach Caleros. There's no reason to expect a drop-off. It can only go up.
Yeah. Like, I'm going to be looking for red zone proficiency. That is something this offense needs. And, red zone proficiency, sustaining drives. I don't want to see John Ryan punt. He will, but we signed John Ryan. We don't need him to punt for us. We need our offense to score.
You know, so, we're both sitting here wearing Lowther shirts.
We are.
I don't want to see him on the field other than for point afters. I'm with you.
Yeah.
I want to see, and especially on Thursday night, I want to see this team come out and compete. I don't give a rat's ass if they win. I have never once cared if they win a preseason game, and I never will. Thursday, the home preseason game is all about sitting down with the people around you, cracking a brew, you know, chatting up about the offseason and watching a little football. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think I've ever come to a point where I go, yay, we won a preseason game. That's for Winnipeg, okay? Yeah. You guys can celebrate all of those wins. I want to see improved offense. I want to see success from Katie Cannon, Kyron Moore. You know, we know we're going to get success from our starting guys. I want to see those guys that are coming into that second year who need to show out. Shaq Evans. He needs to find pay dirt.
Yeah, Kyron Moore.
Like, right? We know what we have in them. I want to see if they've taken it up a level.
Yeah.
We know our defense is going to be amazing. There's no question there. But will our offense come to play this year? And we're going to find out a lot of that on Thursday night. Now, what spot specifically are you most excited to watch?
I think receiver is probably the most exciting. You know, defense isn't all that sexy, but the receiver spot offense, that's what everybody comes to see. There's a lot of competition there still. Lots of second-year players that were looking for that step forward. A lot of first-year guys that were looking to really rise over the other first-year players, even some of the second-year players, return to form from Naaman Roosevelt. There's a lot of guys on that receiving core that you've really got to watch to see who wins the starting spots there.
Yeah, and specifically in the receiving core, like the Canadian receiver. Like, I don't know if there's going to be enough time for McInnes to get in there with him just coming back to practice today. Lenius is still not in practicing, so this is a big time for Picton and for Watson to see who's going to be that starter day one, who's going to get those passes. And also I want to see them look at Zimmerman. Like, he looks like a beast. Like, I'm sure he's going to be our token global player, but, and he'll probably contribute on special teams, but he looks hungry, and I want to see him get the ball.
Well, I mean, he'd better be hungry after, you know, making that terrible career and life decision.
Yeah.
That is the biggest reason why I think everybody wants to see Max Zimmerman show out, is just to shut a certain media guy up, just to, you know, point out, you know, these guys live and breathe football. Just because they play it in Europe or Mexico does not mean they are not football players. Shut your mouth. Zimmerman's looked great so far in camp, by all accounts. Where I'm most excited to see, you know, we know our top three receivers, we know our starting O-line, we know our running back situation, we know our quarterback, we know our entire defense. I'm excited to see, not so much the Canadian receiver, I want to see this battle out in that 4, 5, and 6 American receiver spot. We've seen a lot out of Kyren Moore out of camp. He's looked good, and apparently he had a monster day today. Shaq Evans, I mentioned earlier, I want to see him take that next step. But the guy I'm really excited to see is a guy we just signed in Carlos Henderson, to see if he can push, you know, the guys that have been in camp to another level and come on and take a spot really late in camp. You know, you've got, again, Max Zimmerman. He's obviously going to earn his spot, special teams to start, but he hasn't looked out of place as a receiver. You know, we've seen an uptake this offseason in import talent that I think we've been missing, especially from the receiving side of things. And
keep going.
Ferland's got us all looking at my roof for some reason. The thing that I'm really excited to see is where those guys take it and where we have, because Paul Jones has done an incredible job bringing in talent. There's no question there.
Yeah, we found a gem last year in Jordan Williams-Lambert, and we need to find his heir apparent. Yep. We need that new face, and I agree with you. That's a very big part of this.
And this team has the potential, from the receiving side of things, you know, Rod Peterson mentioned it last week that somebody within the team had ranked our receiving corps 7th out of 9th in the CFL. I don't argue with that right now. You know, we are long ways away from the 3,000 yard receivers of, you know, 2 years ago, which is really sad. But if we can get Manny Arsenault healthy, if we can get, you know, Naaman Roosevelt back on par, and then Jordan Williams-Lambert comes back, you know, suddenly we're looking at a fourth guy. We're looking at, and we've got Kyren Moore, Shaq Evans, Paul McRoberts, you know, Max Zimmerman, Carlos Henderson, Katie Cannon, right? We're looking at, you know, 7 or 8 guys who are fit to fill a 4th or 5th spot, or potentially better, who are not really ready to fit that 1 or 2 spot that we need. Because beyond Naaman Roosevelt, until Manny Arsenault is ready, I don't know that we have a number 2 receiver. We have a lot of number 3s and 4s, but we haven't seen that one guy who filled that spot yet, at least last season. So Thursday is going to go a long way to see where we go, you know, from a 2019 perspective. Going to ask you guys straight up, does the score matter?
No.
No.
Thank you.
No. But do we need to score? Yes. We need to see our offense put some points on the board. But it doesn't matter. Like, it can be 40-40. It can be 37-1 again. It doesn't matter, as long as we, A, see some positive things in our players, B, see the teams gelling together, and C, no injuries.
That's the big one. Get out of Mosaic Stadium on Thursday night healthy, because we know probably 20 of our 24 starting guys, you know, if not more than that. You know, I can't think of more than 1 or 2 spots where I go, I don't really have somebody penciled in there right now.
Yeah.
You know, so get out of that game healthy. You know, show that you can perform, show that you compete against a team that many see as near the top of the CFL standings right now, or the power rankings. Winnipeg's up there. It's not November yet, so that's not a surprise. But right now, Winnipeg is arguably the team to beat. They are the most consistent from last year. You know, they don't have to battle out with new quarterback, new receivers, new everything. They're basically bringing 90% of the same team that was a solid team last year. So I want to see them compete, especially with those number ones.
The one thing, they made this mistake last year, and they absolutely cannot make this mistake again this year, if Zach Collaros is on the field, they need their five best starting offensive linemen on the field. No exceptions. They can't afford that again. If Zach Collaros gets off, you know, if he starts the season with a concussion again, his career's probably over, but the season's probably over.
I'm going to take that one step further. Zach Collaros, if he's on the field, he needs to be on the field with the number one unit across the board, because he needs that confidence. But from a safety perspective, he needs to be protected. 100%. Yeah. I could not agree with you more.
The thing that I think helps that is we don't have that coach anymore who's just going to throw in a quarterback because they're not, the other quarterback's not, you know, doing what he's supposed to right off the hop. Like, Jones threw in Collaros in that preseason game, arguably because the other quarterbacks weren't doing anything, and it seemed like he wanted to either win that game or see something positive from his quarterbacks, which, understandable, but yeah, that right there, with Collaros going in again with the fourth stringers and the third stringers, that hurt us in the first...
That was stupid.
It was stupid, and he gets hurt, and then he, you know, we lose the first game to Toronto, lose the second game to Montreal, or am I wrong?
Oh man, you're testing my memory here.
I don't even think he played the Montreal game because he was hurt and we had Brandon Bridge in.
Yeah, no, that's fair, yeah.
Yeah, but either way, we got off to a horrible start to the season because of that preseason injury to our starting quarterback, because of a boneheaded decision to put our starting quarterback in with fourth and third stringers just to try to win or do something, but it was stupid.
Now, we're gonna wrap this up right away here, but I gotta ask you guys, how much time do you think the number one unit should get on the field on Thursday night?
The first half, I would say.
I feel like they'll probably get about a quarter.
I'd say for the majority of the starting unit, a half sounds about right. Zach Collaros, one quarter, maybe a little bit into the second if he's not performing, but the moment you see he's moving the ball and that there's something there, pull him, we're good. Give Fajardo more time, give Harker more time, you know, give Watford more time, I guess. You know, he'll have to run those that receiver route on third and one again this year. But I agree. You know, we better not see any starters into the third quarter. But that big thing is that first quarter, the Riders need to get the ball, move the ball, show something, because we watched an offense that couldn't do that last year. I don't want to do that again. I'm an offensive guy. You know, I don't know if I've ever bought a defensive player's jersey. You know, I like defense, but offense is where all the fun and excitement is. We need some of that back at Mosaic Stadium, especially going into Grey Cup next year and, you know, down the line. We need to start seeing some fun.
Yeah, the amount of times that they did not give away that Kinexus 185 yards prize is sad.
Do you remember sitting?
Yep, the first game they announced that, we said, oh, wow, they're giving this away every single game, and I think they maybe gave it away at a third of them.
Yeah, we both laughed, like, that's a really, you know, that's a nice way to just give out a couple $100. No, they knew what they were doing.
Yep.
Banks aren't stupid. All right, before we wrap it up, one bit of news here that we got to bring out. Piffles Podcast is launching our second annual Banjo Bowl bus, and both of you guys are on board, if I remember correctly.
Sure am.
Yep, me and my wife, Tammy, are coming.
Yeah, going to be a good time. We had a lot of fun last year. This year, we bumped it up a little bit. We're staying downtown Winnipeg as opposed to off in the boonies, because we want post-game entertainment. We want to have some fun. So $250 gets you your ticket to the game, transportation to and from Winnipeg, transportation to the game, to the hotel, one night stay downtown in Winnipeg, you know, if you're nice. If you're not nice, maybe we'll send you back to Brandon, who knows.
A stop at the Red Barn on the way back.
Oh, absolutely. Man. That Red Barn was amazing.
That was great.
And they were great hosts. And so far, over $1,000 in just rider prizes, and I'm sure there's going to be plenty more to come. So if you're interested, the spot is 60% sold out right now. So if you're thinking of coming on board, there's only about 15 spots left, give or take, and we're not doing a second bus. So just shoot us an email, pifflespodcast@gmail.com. Let us know you want a spot, and we'll reserve one for you. All those spots, $250, is double occupancy. So if you're coming by yourself, we'll bunk you with somebody else who's coming by yourself so you can have a friend for the weekend. That sounds really terrible. I apologize to anybody who's coming by themselves. I'm pretty sure, aren't you coming by yourself?
Yeah. So you might get to bunk with me.
And ticket sales just dropped. No. So that's going to do it this week for episode 117 of the Pipples Podcast. Sheldon, that was your first go at jumping on board. How did that feel?
It was fun. Yeah, a lot better than I thought it would be.
You did great. And Ferlin, thanks as always for coming back. If you want to reach out to either Ferlin or Sheldon, their Twitter handles are...
Fernie635.
And SheldonJones83.
And of course, you can find me at Safamod, or if you want to reach the show, at Pipples Podcast. You can find us on Instagram at... or Instagram.com/PipplesPod. I think that's how you do the Instagram. I don't know. Alex runs the Instagram thing. I don't do that. I don't understand the double tap for the likes. That's a little outside my pay grade. PipplesPodcast.com. You're going to see a lot of articles coming up. We're getting into the regular season. And of course, Ghost Behind Your Mind by Tyler Gilbert.